Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello and welcome back, everyone, to unfortunately another week in American politics. I was hoping we'd wake up in like a different like universe, but it's the same one in a lot of the same fundamental frustrating ways. But anyway, you know, is also the same, but is good. Co-host today, Francesca Fiorentini is here. How's it going, Francesca?
Never missing a Monday, although you know, I may have to miss a Monday. We should talk, but no, hi.
You know, I was literally, as you began that, I thought, you know what? One of the nice things about the pandemic is you doing every Monday, that started as a pandemic thing. That wasn't like a thing, but I now, like that's one of the things that keeps me going is that I can count on that.
Me too, so, you're my touchstone. Great. Sunday night, I'm nuts. By like Monday, I'm like, oh, thank God, touchstone.
Awesome. I heard good things about the Bituation Room yesterday. People are talking in my live streams.
Oh, the chatter is so loud about TBR. Yeah, it was really fun. We talked about relieving student debt, talked about aliens, talked about, you know, minority rule and you know, everything you talk about on a Sunday night.
Exactly. That sounds fun. I watched Stranger Things. But anyway, okay, so everybody, we got a lot of news that we're gonna be getting to. And thank you for joining us, regardless of what platform you're on. There's probably something you can do that's like liking. It might actually be liking, but I might just be like liking. But if you could do that, I would like that or like that so that people know that the stream is live. And if you wanna send us tweets or comments or super chats or anything like that, we'll be responding as we go. With that said, we've got a ton of news. So why don't we jump right into it? I want to show you some videos that show good things happening. Good news for America. It's been a very long time. I'm very excited. So I'm just going to jump into it. Take a look at this.
I'm ready. Let's do this.
That video, and especially if you're on the podcast and you don't know what we're talking about, that was Sandra Lindsay, an intensive care unit nurse at Long Island Jewish Medical Center in Queens, New York, who became the first person in the US to receive a public coronavirus vaccination when she got her first of two Pfizer COVID-19 shots. So she's gonna need the second, of course, and it's gonna take a little bit to kick in, but that is good news. Someone has actually gotten it. And you know, you're probably thinking, that's great. Glad I want a nurse to get it, but also you might be thinking, well, but what about me? When am I gonna get it? Well, we got a little bit more good news. Take a look at this video. That's not just like Christmas presents or whatever, which is would be good news of its own. No, that is stocked like full of vaccines, doses of the vaccine that are now shipping on out. And so Francesca, people are getting a vaccine. It's being distributed around the country. Things are looking somewhat up.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I think that the video of the nurse administering the first vaccine is historic and awesome. And like, and the fact that it is an African-American nurse administering it to an African-American ICU worker, like that should not be lost on people. Two black women who are on the front lines of this fight. And I think in a country that has historically let the black community suffer, that is this yep. COVID virus has disproportionately affected the black community, that historically when it comes to trust in the United States government or the medical system, black Americans have a lot of reason to not trust it. So just the layers of meaning on that very moving moment. And kudos to the ICU nurse for not what I would have done, doing what I would have done, which is immediately going like, no, just kidding. It's all good. I'm not the Hulk. I wish I was.
And credit to the other nurse or doctor for not having trouble finding the vein. That would have just ruined the whole thing. No, they got it on the first try and it's working. It's good news. Yes. You know, it's obviously a pandemic that has been devastating in every conceivable way, in many ways that we would not have conceived of. But obviously, it's been even worse for brown and black Americans because our government is our government. And that's the way things go, unfortunately. And so it's good to see this, definitely. But let's also bear in mind that all of the devastation, everything, you know, at large for black and brown Americans, nobody's responsible for it. That's the amazing thing about it. So many people have died and it's not anybody's fault. And nobody gets in trouble. And I'm getting sidetracked and I'm gonna try not to, but it does still amaze me that we have found like the biggest period of loopholes for murder in the history of mankind. You're just allowed to do stuff that gets tons of people killed and nobody's in trouble. That's sort of weird. But it's good news. I'm gonna end this part with a quote from Sandra Lindsay, the nurse who got it. She says, "I feel like healing is coming. I hope this marks the end to a very painful time in our history." Well, it marks at the best case scenario, the beginning of the end, because as of yesterday, still like 2,500 people had died in the daily reporting. But it does mark the beginning, hopefully, of the end towards full vaccination, and that is a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, the trucks don't give me any kind of hope whatsoever, because we know that those are two trucks you showed, and we will need a lot more than two trucks. And in fact, as I know you've reported, this administration has passed on millions and millions more doses, hundreds of millions more doses of the coronavirus vaccine. You know, so there's that. And then there's the other thing, which is, you know, she is the first person to get the vaccine publicly. What about all what about all the billionaires who've gotten it privately somehow? Like, what, you know, what about the people who aren't telling anyone when all the first doses, these 50 millions, there's enough for 50 million people to be inoculated currently, or that will be coming in. Those should all be frontline healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. And if we've reached the limit with healthcare workers, then essential workers, right?
Yeah.
Yes, grocery baggers. Yes. People who work at Walmart, yes, post office workers. Like, so is that going to happen? Probably not.
Like, if you work at the drive-in at McDonald's, like, you have been at risk every day along the way. A world that gives it to Elon Musk before that person working the drive-in at McDonald's is the world we live in, and not a world I want to live in. But unfortunately, this is the one we have. Yeah, every single billionaire is going to get it. There's going to be some like. Public Integrity is going to do an expose in a year about how doctors had secret back channels for it, but it's happening right now. It's definitely going to happen. The only good thing is if like some of the celebrities we like also get it, because they're rich and like, you know, I want AD Bryant to get the vaccine, okay?
Sure.
But okay. Unfortunately, it also means a lot of Wall Street people are probably going to get it. When will we be able to get the vaccine? Well, HHS Secretary Alex Azar was asked about that in the news. And here's an idea of how many will be vaccinated at what time in the next few months.
So we have vaccine available to get to 20 million people by the end of December, and then a total of 50 million by the end of January. And as Dr. Slawi said, 100 million people by the end of March, but we'll actually have 100 million shots in arms by the end of February between first and second doses. It's such a historic day as we hopefully see the light at the end of the tunnel of this horrible pandemic and the toll of human suffering that we have seen.
Okay, so those are big numbers. Of course, we have to remember that with the Pfizer vaccine, it is a two-shot thing. You have to take it and then go back and take it a little bit later on. But I'm not 100% sure about Moderna. I think Moderna is one, but we also have coming up in just a couple of weeks, there's going to be data coming in for two other vaccines that are being worked on. It is possible that those, if they are shown to be effective, could be approved, and then those numbers could be even higher than Alex Azar was talking about there. But the idea that 100 million could be vaccinated by the end of March in just a few months, that's a good chunk of the US population. And then when you add to it the probably 15 to 20% of America that will have already gotten the virus because of the failure of our government, that is a good portion of the way to herd immunity. Thankfully, most of the way you're supposed to get it through vaccinations, not just rampant infections.
Yeah. I mean, it is weird though to be like, you know, and I think even Pelosi said like help is on the way, you know, now that the vaccine is here. But and like the things we have been through, that's the wrong tense to use, Alex Azar. Like we are going through, we will continue to go through. Like, and you've asked this before on the show, and I think it's something that stuck with me, and we should all be asking ourselves, which is the darkest day? And the answer is we still don't know that. We won't know that because it actually keeps getting worse. And so once again, yay vaccine. Can we please get mass testing, quarantining, contact tracing, and then mask wearing and et cetera. But like these are once again things that we do not have. But yay, vaccine. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. I add him to the list of everyone who's talking about this thing in the past tense. Like, okay, I guess maybe if you're rich and you know all that, like it's like, hey, we don't have to worry about it anymore. Like, no, you weren't worried about it anyway. No, it's not over. The worst days are, as you said, still to come. But I want to give just a little bit more information for people who, okay, so it's going to be distributed. Okay, but like, how are you going to get it? Like, do I have to set up some sort of appointment? Do I have to hope that I'll be prioritized? Well, the fundamental question is, when can I go to CVS and just get it? That's what will actually help people. And they move to that topic here.
I think we could be seeing that by late February going into March. It really, again, is going to be up to our nation's governors. But with the Moderna and Pfizer vaccine, we'll have, as I said, as many as 100 shots in arms by the end of February. And if we get the Johnson & Johnson or AstraZeneca vaccine approved in January, when their data comes in, we'll have significant additional supplies. And again, late February, in the March time period, I think you'll start seeing much more like a flu vaccination campaign, people going into their Kroger, their CVS, their Walgreens.
The general population.
Walmart. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So it is looking like, assuming that that actually bears out and there aren't huge supply chain issues or distribution issues or new, you know, concerns about side effects or anything, probably within a month or so of after the year anniversary of sort of the lockdowns going into effect, we could possibly get the shot that will enable us to go back about our daily lives. After like 30
How months. About all of these companies give us meds under $10 for the next 6 months until they're able to roll out the vaccine completely? Yeah. Why don't they just lower the price of like insulin and Humira and things like that, and things that every people need pretty much every day and are being gouged for? How about we just make a little deal ski, you know? Bernie would have won. What was I gonna say? You know, here's what I would also just like to say about the vaccine. I think it is not okay to just roll out like you've got Pfizer, Moderna that had like a deal with the Trump administration, which seems to be in part why they passed on the Pfizer additional vaccines. And now you've got Johnson & Johnson. What's the difference between these vaccines? Is there a difference? What's in them? What does it do? Like, I need Fauci and a lot of charts. Like, yes. Obviously, I believe in science. I guess I trust science, but I also think that we also, one, were told this would take way longer than it's taken. And I'm not a scientist, so I don't understand what vaccines, like, what is in this and how was it developed? And so I think that should be general knowledge.
Sure. Yeah, and I think, you know, hopefully like some doctors that are generally trusted, like Dr. Fauci, will be talking about that. You know, and as much as like it's a stunt to have like Obama take it, like if he takes it, theoretically he knows that it's safe or whatever. But yeah, the thing about how long it takes is, I think there's been a bit of confusion about why it was going to take long. One of the reasons that it takes so long is that generally there are multiple cycles of tests to test long-term side effects and everything like that, that are very carefully watched, and that takes a long time. That was sped up. Like they were willing to get it out there because it was killing so many people. In terms of when the thing was actually developed, the articles are out there, you can read them. I don't have them with me, but I don't know if it was Pfizer or Moderna, but the basic design for it was actually finalized before US deaths from COVID. Like it was relatively fast to make, it just had to be confirmed that it actually worked and be tested for literally months and months and months. But the actual process to make it was pretty quick. Yeah. And so thankfully, it is coming. Although again, we'll still see. I mean, like Alex Azar is giving us some good numbers, but I don't know, Redfield was saying fall. So March and fall are different. They're very different. So we'll have to see.
What's between March and fall? Like, is it 10 years or 15? I can't remember.
Like 15 years.
Right. That's what I thought.
As of today, the Electoral College is doing its Electoral College thing. They have begun to meet and cast their votes. Vermont's electors were actually the first in the nation to vote, giving the state's 3 electoral votes to Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. So that is good news. We are now one step closer to being done with this thing, but that doesn't mean the efforts to overthrow it aren't done. With Donald Trump going on a tear, tweeting swing states that have found massive voter fraud, which is all of them, cannot legally certify these votes as complete and correct without committing a severely punishable crime. I don't know what that means or what he would do, but he is arguing that states will have committed crimes. Anyway, then, you know, yada, 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 you go through a whole bunch of tweets and he ends with, therefore votes cannot be certified. This election is under protest. Oh, good. So you found a protest you like. That's good. So it's under protest again. I don't know what that means. I mean, hypothetically, you could take it to court, and they have. The Supreme Court of Wisconsin just rejected them this morning, leaving them 1-59 in court, which is really bad. To put it in perspective, in like an alternate universe, that's my MMA record. Like, that's how bad it is. 1-59.
Wait, John. So you're saying there's a chance?
I could find one person I could sucker punch or something. Anyway, and so the last step that remains after this, now that we've got the Electoral College voting, is a January 6th meeting of Congress to count and certify the electoral votes. Trump's allies in the House are promising to inject some drama into that process by challenging Biden's win in Congress, but it'll most likely basically be a filibuster, which will delay it for a few hours. Or maybe it'll result in a process where each state gets to vote and then they get to choose Trump, even though the voters rejected him and democracy is done. It's a small chance, but there is still a chance that our country's dead. So look forward to that coming up in just a few weeks.
I really hope that AOC also takes the floor and reads an alternate version of Green Eggs and Ham and is just like, Trump did not win on a box with a fox or on Fox News. He did not win Sam I Am, whatever, Uncle Sam I Am. Like the whole, just play, put it on its head. Do make it a performance. But like what that means is that we are not done seeing every Republican just lick all the boot and brown all the nose, or nose all the brown, whichever happens. The point is like both are bad. It's gonna be so pathetic. And they've already started to turn after the, you know, after the Supreme Court struck, you know, the Texas AG's attempt down to contest the election. A lot of Republicans have been like, let's pack it in, but like there is still more pathetic displays of sycophantry ahead.
Yeah.
And wow, like I don't, what do we get? Like, is it a little bit like what happens when it's all over? Are we just gonna be like, okay, cool. Anyway, moving on. Like there's no accountability, clearly. I'm just wondering what happens when it's all over.
Yeah, I mean, we'll try to move on and turn to, you know, pushing Joe Biden to do the right thing and actually have a government again. But they're still gonna be out there. And the reason that there's still this nonsense, including nonsense, which we're gonna turn to in a minute with videos, is it's that the grift continues. There is money to be made. There is followers to get. There is loyalty to profess. It's all grift and it's bad for you, to sort of quote, you know, a famous name in comedy. It's all grift and they have to continue to show that they are the good ones, and whoever falls off is the best. Like there's a reason that like they've been yelling Fox News sucks, and then this last weekend they were saying Fox News conspired. The MyPillow guy said Fox News conspired with the Democrats to take Trump out because they've like asked him a tough question or two over the last few years. Like this is all how it works. You can only get to the top of the heap by stabbing people along the way. And so they're all getting their knives in while they still can.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
As of today, the Electoral College is doing its Electoral College thing. They have begun to meet and cast their votes. Vermont's electors were actually the first in the nation to vote, giving the state's three electoral votes to Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. So that is good news. We are now one step closer to being done with this thing, but that doesn't mean the efforts to overthrow it aren't done. With Donald Trump going on a tear, tweeting swing states that have found massive voter fraud, which is all of them, cannot legally certify these votes as complete and correct without committing a severely punishable crime. I don't know what that means or what he would do, but he is arguing that states will have committed crimes. Anyway, then, you know, yada, 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 you go through a whole bunch of tweets and he ends with, "Therefore, votes cannot be certified. This election is under protest." Oh, good. So you found a protest you like. That's good. So it's under protest again. I don't know what that means. I mean, hypothetically, you could take it to court, and they have. The Supreme Court of Wisconsin just rejected them this morning, leaving them 1-59 in court, which is really bad. To put it in perspective, in like an alternate universe, that's my MMA record. Like, that's how bad it is. 1-59.
Wait, John. So you're saying there's a chance?
I could find one person I could sucker punch or something anyway. And so the last step that remains after this, now that we've got the Electoral College voting, is a January 6th meeting of Congress to count and certify the electoral votes. Trump's allies in the House are promising to inject some drama into that process by challenging Biden's win in Congress, but it'll most likely basically be a filibuster, which will delay it for a few hours. Or maybe it'll result in a process where each state gets to vote and then they get to choose Trump, even though the voters rejected him and democracy is done. It's a small chance, but there is still a chance that our country's dead. So look forward to that coming up in just a few weeks.
I really hope that AOC also takes the floor and reads an alternate version of Green Eggs and Ham and is just like, Trump did not win on a box with a fox or on Fox News. He did not win Sam I Am, whatever, Uncle Sam I Am. Like the whole, just play, put it on its head. Do make it a performance. But like what that means is that we are not done seeing every Republican just lick all the boot and brown all the nose, or nose all the brown, whichever happens. The point is like both are bad. It's gonna be so pathetic. And they've already started to turn after the, you know, after the Supreme Court struck, you know, the Texas AG's attempt down to contest the election. A lot of Republicans have been like, let's pack it in, but like there is still more pathetic displays of sycophantry ahead.
Yeah.
And wow, like I don't, what do we get? Like, is it a little bit like what happens when it's all over? Are we just gonna be like, okay, cool. Anyway, moving on. Like there's no accountability, clearly. I'm just wondering what happens when it's all over.
Yeah, I mean, we'll try to move on and turn to, you know, pushing Joe Biden to do the right thing and actually have a government again. But they're still going to be out there. And the reason that there's still this nonsense, including nonsense which we're going to turn to in a minute with videos, is it's that the grift continues. There is money to be made. There is followers to get. There is loyalty to profess. It's all grift and it's bad for you, to sort of quote a famous name in comedy. It's all grift, and they have to continue to show that they are the good ones. And whoever falls off is the bad. Like, there's a reason that, like, they've been yelling Fox News sucks. And then this last weekend, they were saying Fox News conspired. The MyPillow guy said Fox News conspired with the Democrats to take Trump out, because they've like asked him a tough question or two over the last few years. Like, this is all how it works. You can only get to the top of the heap by stabbing people along the way. And so they're all getting their knives in while they still can. So as the electors are out there casting their ballots in the Electoral College, there's a shadow version of that process apparently going on. And we learned that this morning thanks to Goblin Stephen Miller.
The only date in the Constitution is January 20th. So we have more than enough time to right the wrong of this fraudulent election result and certify Donald Trump as the winner of the election. As we speak today, an alternate slate of electors in the contested states is going to vote, and we're going to send those results up to Congress. This will ensure that all of our legal remedies remain open. That means that if we win these cases in the courts, that we can direct that the alternate slate of electors be certified. The state legislatures in Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania can do the same. And likewise, Congress has that opportunity as well to do the right thing.
Okay, so a lot of that at the end was just a repeating of their general strategy, which is we lost the vote, so we want the states or Congress to just say Trump is the winner no matter what. It's fundamentally anti-democratic, but we're past that now. The alternate slate of electors, I don't know what that is. Like, I know that that's a strategy, that they just choose random people and say that they're the official electors when they're not. I guess that's their legal strategy going forward.
I talked to actually Larry Lessig about this on The Conversation specifically, and this was his argument, like, kind of like, it's not over yet. This is the final card up their rotten little oil leaking sleeve that is begging and getting on state legislatures to be like, well, we're just going to send different electors who are loyalists to go vote for Trump, rather than voting the way that their people voted and the way that they're, I believe, legally obligated to vote, at least democratically obligated to vote. So yeah, I mean, it's just incredible to hear Stephen Miller speak, because even Trump speaks with a certain amount of irony and like bombast. And Stephen Miller is just this locked in little snot nosed kid who's like, this is going to happen and you're gonna let me do it. Like, it is, yeah. And you realize that he is the voice in Trump's head, and he's the only one who hasn't been fired or even been on thin ice with Donald Trump. And he is like his little, he's like the devil on his shoulder. I mean, Trump doesn't need one. He's all devil. He's mostly devil and, you know, Big Mac sauce. But like it is just so striking to hear somebody with zero irony or zero understanding of like the fact that their words are do not actually, they're not in, you're not speaking in reality, buddy. Like, that's not actually gonna happen, but this is their last ditch effort. And we will see, you know, will state legislatures try and do this? Because yeah, all the legal strategies have failed at this point. And in which case, Congress and I believe Mike Pence would also have a very big role to play. And we know that 126 Republican representatives, you know, wanted to overturn the real election results. So I wouldn't put it past them.
Exactly, yeah, and that means that while it seems a long shot, it seems unlikely, like all of these have been, like they're 1 in 59 again. It still technically could happen, so we don't get to go to sleep, basically. Like, it's just too consequential. Like, it could mean that elections fundamentally don't matter, that the vote, and even more than they already do. Like, your vote already is only sort of second hand of concern anyway, thanks to the Electoral College. But now even that doesn't matter. And it's also a reminder that the way that they're writing this out, like we've now reached the period where it's gone on long enough. It's infested enough actual elected Republicans, regular Republican voters, right-wing media, alternative and even more insane right-wing media, that Democrats just don't get to win narrow victories in the future. That's just, it's not going to work. Like Trump got destroyed and they're fighting it to the bitter end. So just bear that in mind. If we ever have a close race in the future, that's gonna be fun. Most of us seem to have come to the conclusion some time ago that Donald Trump is not exactly a good loser. He's kind of bad at it. Karl Rove is starting to warm up to that position, as he'll make clear in this video.
What's his goal? If his goal is to lay the predicate to come back in 2024 and run again, he's helping himself at least gain the nomination. But I think in the long run, he's not helping himself or the country. America likes comebacks, but they don't like sore losers. And he is on the edge of looking like a sore loser and probably will look like it after January 6th.
I mean, that is just amazing. So look, I get that he would probably say, if you could get him to be honest, like, I'm trying to get through to Trump in the only way possible. And you gotta be like really comforting to this guy because he is just all raw red ego. But he's on the edge of appearing like a sore loser. The election was like 6 weeks ago and he got destroyed in a landslide. A landslide, the way he described it, when he got the exact same electoral college margin in 2016, he called it a landslide. So I'm just using his words. He's on the edge, Francesca, of appearing like he might be a sore loser.
It's almost like there's a double standard for everyone else in this country, including his former opponent, Hillary Clinton, and him. It's almost like he sees himself as special and different and that he's entitled to be treated differently. And it's like maybe he's above the law. Is that weird to say? This late stage, it's just, you know, what I love about that quote, like Karl Rove is this weird like barometer for where the Republican Party is. Like I think one of the best reactions was when Obama won in 2012, I believe, and he was like, "What? I thought we'd rig this." I thought we'd suppress this. You know, like I think he was like, "We gotta re-look at the numbers." So Karl Rove is like total crap, but he just explained the rationale for why Trump wouldn't concede anyway, which is like, I know he's trying to run again in 2024, and I know he is securing both a funding base and the nomination. Like that, there you have it. There you have it. He doesn't care what he looks like because again, he thinks he's different and special.
Well, yeah, and also because whether he gets it or not, it is true that what he looks like is entirely dependent on whether you have already accepted him as your Lord and Savior. Like, should he be worried about looking like a loser? Well, he does look like a loser, unless
he is
you're
a
one
loser.
Of the, well, he's also a loser, but he also looks like a bad loser. But if you're one of the millions of Americans who will never get enough of just hearing him say, "They rigged it, they robbed me, like never seen before," like I couldn't take more than a few seconds of that willingly, but there are some people that just, they wanna hear him say that stuff for hours and they will drive to a place, a packed place full of disease to hear him go on stage and talk about it. And those people will never think that he looks bad, that he's being ungracious or whiny or pathetic, even though he is obviously those things.
It just doesn't work. You said that about, like, you brought up MMA. I don't know any fighters, but I do know that, like, if a fighter I liked lost and then spent the whole time being like, "I'd be like, shut up and train, dude. Like, shut up and do better. You lost. I watched it. Go away, hit the gym.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Like, it's not, you can't keep whining about this or else I'm not gonna be your fan anymore. So I see that. But then again, I think even MMA might be less culty than MAGA politics.
Yeah. it's just a thing in politics now that because of either like fractionalization of the media, the fact that there's, you can get media that's closer to exactly what you want to hear combined with whatever, it's resulted in an increasing number of people who live in the blessed place that the person they like will never lose or be wrong or be bad.
Yeah.
And if that does happen, then they were robbed. And that is all that they are, is a belief that I like this person, so they're always right and can never lose. It's a sad position, but it's unfortunately becoming a more and more common position. And Donald Trump, he has gotten that, and it's working quite well for him. This morning, I was surprised to see that a Fox and Friends interview that was apparently conducted over the weekend rolled out. And Brian Kilmeade, who doesn't always question Donald Trump, was willing to point out to him his massive legal failures so far. And that goes about the way you might have expected. Let's take a look.
1 second. They cheated like nobody's ever cheated before, and they got caught, just like the spying on my campaign right. Got caught. They cheated like nobody's cheated before, and they got caught. So nobody can go in and say, oh, congratulations on running a good race. They didn't run a good race. They cheated. They dropped hundreds of thousands of ballots.
Right.
They did things that nobody's ever seen, and we caught them.
But your guys have been unable to prove it as of now. No, if something
excuse
happens
me, excuse me. We've proven it, but no judge has had the courage, including the Supreme Court. I am so disappointed in them. No judge, including the Supreme Court of the United States, has had the courage to allow it to be heard.
Okay. So just want to quickly note, as I will the rest of my life, and I know it doesn't matter, but man, he has got the weakest body language in the world. The fact that he keeps doing the little touches on Brian Kilmeade, and he keeps like, imagine if I did the show and I was like, well, when the Electoral College meets and then they vote, like, what would you think about me as a person?
You mean so you just did me talking normally, because I talk with my hands all the time?
No, I'm Italian too. It's the specific things he does, the hand, like the turning of the hand, the little points, the like putting his hands up as if he's scared and has to ward off the person that's talking to him. Like, that is not an Italian thing. That's a bizarre thing. But
that's
anyway,
like it's like a Trump Vogue. It's a weird Trump Vogue. Like, excuse me, and I don't know. You gotta get it.
But anyway,
fraud. Okay, yeah.
But Kilmeade there did say, then why can't you prove it to a judge? And he says, no, we have proved it. They just don't have the courage. No, but like, that's not how proof works. But again, that is how grift works. Just say that you won. Not only did we win the election, but we won those legal challenges. You know, just the judge won't agree with us on that.
It's the most mafia, you know, thing that I've ever seen. Like, that's just straight out of The Sopranos, that scene. You're like, what I say, we won. Excuse me, we won. Yeah, but you lost in court. No. I just said we won. Mm-hmm. And like, Kilmeade is not even, I don't think he's looking at him in the face. He's sort of almost looking down or beyond him, because it is so painful to look that much ignorance in the face. And he's just being dressed down in the weirdest way. But he's being dressed down like a mob boss dresses you down. Because with this president, it's only you're with us or against us. And you either are a sycophantic, you know, coddler, or you're not. And if you are a sycophantic coddler, you're a bad journalist, because you don't even get a single word in, you just get dressed down and spoken to. So,
He did point out the loss, and he's got to feel really weird, because this guy that, you know, recently had COVID keeps touching him needlessly on the arm for some reason. And so he's probably going to be considered by Fox viewers to be a massive traitor, because he pointed out that Trump has lost in court. But if that isn't enough to consign him to a media grave, he's also going to ask Trump about the inauguration.
So would you show up at the inauguration? Will you?
I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about this. We've done a great job. I got more votes than any president in the history of our country. In the history of our country, right? Not even close. 75 million, far more than Obama, far more than anybody.
Well, you know, except for the one guy. The one guy got more votes than you. And
who
he's
going to
be at the inauguration. I don't know. Like, yeah, again, it's the weakness. It's the I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about this. I did good. Like, he said, I'm not going to answer your question. I want to talk about how I did a good job. It, like, if I just scooped ice cream, and that was what I did, and by the way, for a long time, that was what I did as a caterer, and I just like took any criticism of me to say, no, I scooped good. What would you think about me? And you should think at least as critically about the person. He's the most powerful person in the world. And he is just so committed to this nonstop congratulating himself for things that he didn't even succeed in.
John, you scooped good. All right. Just want to let you know.
Pretty good.
If anyone told you you didn't scoop good, you scoop good.
Thank you.
And I want you to know. No, like, why are we asking him these questions anymore? The answer is no. Of course, he's not going to go to the inauguration. He's not accepting reality. And yeah, it's so, it's like the whole, the storyline out of this election, one of them, there are a few, but one of them really on the Biden side is a historic number of people voted, actually. Yeah. Literally the most in American history. Yes, we're a bigger country now, but the most people ever voted for Biden. And like, he just took that storyline and applied it to himself.
Yeah.
Untrue. No, we know he's gonna, what is he gonna chop her over to Mar-a-Lago and have some sort of like massive cry fest, just like a little cuddle puddle. And everyone's gonna, you know, yeah, I'm gonna be rolling in MAGA tears, obviously.
I don't like the use of cuddle puddle. That makes me uncomfortable. But anyway, yes, that is probably what he's going to do. And with that, I'm done with it. It's just, it's, what is it, like 40 more days? Do we have like 40 more days of him?
No, less, anyway. I thought.
Is it less? Okay, well, a famous president anyway. It is time to vote if you're in Georgia. The early voting in the two Senate runoffs has begun. And this is important. More than half of the record 5 million votes in the November 3rd general election were cast during its 2-week early voting period there in Georgia. Early and posting voting could be even more important because of the short time frame that voters have to request and send back ballots by mail. The period isn't as long. And it could also be important because there's going to be far fewer actual voting sites in most counties to go and vote in. But this is your heads up. If you're in Georgia, the future of the Senate is now in your hands. Hopefully you have already voted.
We have the get your booty to the poll, my favorite get out the vote campaign. And with a bunch of erotic dancers, exotic. I don't know whether it's erotic or exotic. I never know. Many of them are exotic. Strippers. And I love that. So yes, early voting has begun. Yes. And get your booty to the poll, do a little dance while you do it. Also, there's there's going to be, I mean, I know we're gonna talk about this, but there's the shenanigans only roll on. But I hope that some of the ridiculousness that the GOP has perpetuated around the reliability of this election will suppress some of the Republican voters who are like, nuh-uh, Loeffler and Perdue don't love my president. We will see. It's going to be tough though.
Yeah. Look, I want everyone in America to vote. Preferably based on an accurate idea of the facts, the stakes, and all of that. We're never gonna have that, of course, but I want it to be as easy as possible to vote in America. Not everyone actually agrees with that. And so look, it's not gonna surprise most of you that the Republicans are against democracy. But when I make that case, I'm sure some mouth breathing Republicans would say that no, that's not true. So when possible, I like to add a little bit more evidence to the pile. Here is Newt Gingrich saying, why is Georgia Secretary of State Raffensperger working so hard to add drop boxes and take other steps to make it harder for Republicans to win? Is he really that intimidated by Stacey Abrams? I wanna be fair. I don't know what other interpretation of that tweet there is then. If more people vote, Republicans will lose. Is there another way to take that tweet from the former Speaker of the House for the Republicans?
I interpret it as I am afraid of Stacey Abrams. That's really what he's saying. He says, we've seen the movement she's mobilized and the incredible voter turnouts in November. And the massive registration that her organization has you know, piloted. And yeah, I'm scared. So you need to remove like ballot boxes, which we've discussed for so long, also hurts Republicans. Republicans might not have an idea of, you know, who to vote for when it comes to their best interests, but they, some of them just wanna drop off their ballot as well.
Yeah, totally. And I'm trying to, AJ Nestor on Twitch said, he said that out loud. Yeah, they just, because again, like their voters understand, like their voters back in the day, maybe, would have liked the sort of the idea, the narrative that the Republicans are in favor of democracy. They're the defenders of democracy and all of that. They still would have wanted the suppression, especially of black and brown voters, but they would have liked that. But now they get that that is not the way the country is working, either demographically or in terms of politics, in terms of how the parties can respond to the crises that are actually facing us. They know that if people are able to freely and easily register and vote, the Republicans won't win. And so one of two things is going to happen. Either the Democrats are always going to win, or the Republicans are going to have to actually change their policies. And with those as the two options, most Democratic voters are fine with suppression to stop either of those things from happening. And they don't mind the fact that it's totally open, that one of the highest profile Republicans in the country can just say more voting is bad for Republicans, and it's barely even news.
Yeah.
But anyway, I also saw a comment saying John registered to vote. Well, I don't live in Georgia. My brother does, but I don't live in Georgia. But you all should register to vote. So in addition to telling you to do that now, I also want to use this as an opportunity to let you know about the special event that's going to be airing later on today on the TYT Network, the Georgia Get Out the Vote special, which is going to be hosted by myself and Benjamin Dixon. Along the way, we're going to be joined by Mondale Robinson, Justin Horowitz, Rashad Ritchie, Ida Rodriguez, Cenk Uygur is going to be there. Man, that's an awesome crew of people that are going to be there. And you can watch that at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time at tyt.com/live. And I'm sure also on our YouTube and our Twitch and everything like that. We're going to give you information about how to get involved, whether you live in Georgia or not, you can help this effort. We're gonna give you information about the stakes, about the people who are running and all of that. So hopefully people will be like all aboard, because this is really important. It couldn't get more important right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, I think Gingrich also said the other day that, you know, he repeated this line that America is not a democracy, we're a republic, which is like saying a poodle is not a dog, it's a canine. It's the same thing. Like, republic just means you're not a monarchy, you know, and democracy then means by the people, and it's virtually the same thing. But I was talking with Astra Taylor, who's this awesome, you know, organizer and writer. And she has documented the way that the Republicans have leaned into the idea of minority rule. And the way that they, instead of in 2012, when they were told after Romney lost that they really need to expand their voting base with Latinos and African Americans, they were like, yeah, cool, nuh-uh. And they were, you know, doubled and tripled down on essentially what is white supremacy embedded in the political system. And I think it's so fascinating because, you know, as a lot of, you know, as she and others point out, is that in the, you know, in the 80s, even Reagan was like, yay, democracy. And we're so used to democracy being sort of parroted and held up by people who ultimately don't believe in it, you know, and suppress the vote and like don't want people of color to vote. But now they're not even saying democracy. They're just saying that it is actually bad. Democracy is bad. And the founding fathers, quote, never wanted democracy in the first place. And in fact, there's some grounds for that, but there, of course, but there's also, it seems like they did evolve on the question. But it is, let us never forget that, like, they're pivoting. They're pivoting because they can't win without regular suppression and regular cheating. So now the pivot is, it's a messaging pivot. It's just, we should be suppressing and cheating because this country was always meant for landowning white men to have more of a say than everybody else. That's it.
Yeah. It's something more fundamental than democracy that they can claim to represent.
Yeah.
It's like that, it's a hidden extra level. Like how, you know, Trump ran as he's gonna be an outsider, he's gonna clean out government. But then once he's in government, they have to clean out the deep state. There's another layer of it that I have to get. I'm still an outsider, even though we have all the political power of the country. Still an outsider. We are in just the closing weeks of these Georgia runoffs. So any big breaking news could be the thing that clinches it. And for Reverend Warnock, there's a little bit of bad news. I was on Twitter and someone who works for the NRSC apparently unearthed a video from 2017 of Reverend Warnock, and that Republican was spreading this to destroy his campaign. And well, here it is.
While others were sleeping, members of the United States Senate declared war and launched a vicious and evil attack on the most vulnerable people in in America. Herod is on the loose. Herod is a cynical politician who's willing to kill children and kill the children's health program in order to preserve his own wealth and his own power. Hope is in the air, but Herod is on the loose. The hopes and the fears of all the years have met in thee tonight. And so on Friday night, the United States Senate decided by a slim majority to pick the pockets of the poor, the sick, the old, and the yet unborn in order to line the pockets of the ultra rich. Don't tell me about gangsters and thugs on the streets. There are more gangsters and thugs in Washington, D.C., in the Capitol, than there are. A bunch of.
So that was in response to the 2017 Trump tax cut bill passing. And it was also the best thing that Warnock's ever said. That's his best moment on video, brought to you by someone who works for the NRSC, believing that that video is going to own Warnock. What is wrong with people? I tweeted, what kind of mold has to be infesting your brain for you to watch that and think, oh, we got him. He said that giving trillions of dollars to the ultra wealthy makes them thugs. Yeah, that's like the nicest way to characterize that, actually.
Yeah, no, I've just like a lot of love, a lot of endearment, you know, and also like, let's never forget that the fake populism from the right claims to say the same things, that you're being robbed, that everyone in the White House or in Washington is like they're the swamp and they're all corrupt, except they are actually the swamp, except they just want more and more swamp, and they're the swamp creatures. Like, they've only made it more swampy. And yet when Warnock says something, or if Bernie says something, Well, then they're anti-American. Well, then they're terrible. We should drag them through the mud. So like,
yeah,
the double standard around if you're progressive, if you're black, and you call out corruption in Washington, ooh. But if Trump wants to co-opt your message and he wants to take lift everything you say, like he's lifted Bernie's lines, you know, wholesale and repackage it as his own fake right-wing populism. Oh, wow. Genius. Amazing. Wins elections. Yeah.
Exactly. It's just sheer madness. And look, they've been trying to make him out to be some crazy, they call Pete Buttigieg a communist, but they're trying to call him a communist and all of that, make him out like Kelly Loeffler's strategy was to just keep calling him radical liberal Warnock over and over and over. And the thing is, okay, maybe that'll work. Maybe that'll scare George away from him personally. He ain't that crazy to the left, by the way. Like, there's plenty that we disagree with him on. But I will also say, if he's able to get enough of his ads out and get it in front of enough people, the thing he has going for him is, even though I disagree with him on some things in politics, there is something sort of fundamentally likable about him. And not just that he can do videos, you know, from when he was a pastor like what we just showed you. But I also want to show you his ad strategy. Here's one of his most recent ones, Encourage People Ad, just came out today. And just tell me that you can watch this and not think that stood up next to Kelly Loeffler, whose best case scenario, the best interpretation of her is that she's a robot. Who thinks that this guy isn't likable?
There's a lot of stuff to do this time of year. Get the tree.
Done.
Hang the lights. Not yet. Wrap presents. Check. But this year, there's one extra thing to do, vote. That's right, early voting starts December 14th, so make voting part of your holiday plans. It'll probably take you less time than it'll take me to do this. I'm Raphael Warnock, and I approve this message.
I am sorry, that's likable. Is that not likable? Am I crazy? Am I just getting like pulled in like?
That's a good writer. That is a good writer.
I was like, that's good.
I was like, where's that lights joke going? It comes back in the end, gets you. That was a great callback. Oh, it's very, it's hard not to like that. Wow. And it's like zero political. It's like not, he really doesn't even say what he's about, which, and like, I know as progressives, we hate that. We hate that, like, it's only about, you know, likability. You know, we insist that it's about policy and it's always about, but it's like, actually, it's not. Like, it is about coming across as human and as relatable. And maybe that sounds icky to people, but I actually think it's a good thing to also have that. And by the same token, you need face-to-face contact. You need direct conversations with people. And I know folks in Georgia are still knocking doors because they realize the value of that. Obviously, they're doing it safely. But once again, it's like, I know we have an allergic reaction to being like, oh, why are you trying to be cute? Just tell me if you're for Medicare for all. And like, sadly, that is not the way politics are played. And that's sadly not the way you win.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, we can want both.
Yeah.
And the right, man, it's like Sean Hannity will show like, here's like the radical agenda of the squad, and he shows like all these policies that are awesome. Or like, do you remember the ultimate example of this? And I don't know, there should be a term for this when something that is objectively awesome is pitched as a thing that's gonna destroy someone. Do you remember when they thought they were gonna like make a fool out of or destroy AOC with her college dancing video? And it's like the most joyous video I've ever seen. Like there are videos of people like feeding pizza to a pack of chubby raccoons that are less joyous than her dancing. This flower of youth, and they're like, we got her, she's going down now. Like they are so out of touch, not just politically, but with like something fundamental to being a human, to being happy, to living in the light.
Look at her smiling and moving her body in squiggle ways. What to the sound of words that have a beat harmony. Like
they're
yeah,
like
exactly.
They're worse than the Footloose villain. I don't get it.
They're all the Footloose villain. Everyone, the GOP is just the Footloose villain. But like, yeah, and you know, when that video was about to drop, I was like, oh no, here we go. This is my college video. Someone's drunk. You know, and high. We're double faded. What's going on? You know, like I don't know, or like, this is some Mardi Gras thing. No, it's like an adorable, and it wasn't it like for a cause? It was like for her class and stuff, and it was.
Yeah, it was totally, yeah. And it didn't matter if it was just, if she just did it, it's joy.
Yeah.
You know what people want? You know what people would support? Moving in squiggle ways 2024. That's what people want, okay? I want there to be a term for this thing that happens in the news. I think only in America, I think this is the only place that has it, which is the feel good story that is only feel good until like you're done seeing the headline. And then you sit back and you think about the country that was required to make that story. Well, I've got one for you. Linda Tutt High School in Sanger launched a grocery store in November so students could purchase necessities, including toilet paper, meat, and basic food items. They pay for their purchases by earning points from good deeds. The high school partnered with First Refuge Ministries, Texas Health Resources, and the grocery store Albertsons to open the store, which is completely run by students who manage the inventory, stock the shelves, and help other students find and bag the products they need. You can see a picture actually here of what it looks like. You can see obviously the big toilet paper and the Easy Mac. If you go with the Easy Mac, you're gonna wanna have the toilet paper soon after, but those are staples, I get that. And we have a comment from a principal in Linda Tutt that says, in our school district, there's roughly 2,750 students enrolled, and throughout the district, 43% of these students are considered economically disadvantaged. About 3.6% of our students are considered homeless. We thought it was important to support them and their families and make sure they had food on the table. So that is a feel good story that by doing good deeds, tutoring people, helping old women across the street, I don't know, whatever, they can earn points to get their toilet paper and meat and mac and cheese. Feel good story for you.
We are means testing toilet paper. That's literally what that is. It's like, oh no, you deserve to be able to, you know, wipe your own butt, but first, you gotta put in 30 hours of like, you know, community service or whatever. Like,
yeah.
this is not a right as a human being. I mean, yeah, it's very upsetting. And yeah, we're gonna have news stories in 2021 that are like, some of us are still alive. Don't we get a cookie for that? No, there are no cookies. It's all depressing. It's like when, it reminds me of when George W. Bush, this was that classic line where he like talks to a woman who was like, I work four jobs. And he was like, see that? That's the American spirit. Working four jobs. We work four jobs here. Yeah, that's our hard work. And it was like, no, you miss the point of that entirely. But
yeah, it's there, like, yeah, it's like you might see like an old timey story of like a fireman who gets a kitten out of a tree. But like that, it's not good that the kitten was in the tree. We don't want to keep putting kittens in trees. Like just because something is saved doesn't mean it's a good thing. So by the way, if you are involved in this program, if you work for Albertsons or whichever or whatever, or you're part of the school system or anything like that, you're all good people because you're doing what you can. I'm glad that you're doing it and everything, but none of this should be necessary. None of this should exist. This can only exist because our country is fundamentally a failure in many of the ways that matter most. And so just like when someone who has cancer and has no insurance can raise $100,000 on GoFundMe, that is a good thing, but it is a good thing that can only exist in a country that doesn't properly value the life of its citizens.
Yeah. And a country that has this like bizarre hero worship of people who overcome all odds and leave, you know, and leave their communities behind and lift themselves up by the bootstraps, which is a totally BS myth anyway, as I'm sure you all know. But like, we love that outlier. It doesn't matter that 399 people are dead if it's that 400th person that managed to not die in squalor. Wow. Lift them up, you know, and that is no way to run a society. It's a great way to write a Hallmark film. It's a great way to like have like write a movie script, but we don't live in that movie anymore. Sadly, we live in an incredibly unequal country.
Exactly. When last we checked in with Pete Buttigieg, he was about to become the ambassador to China. Why? But now he might become our next Secretary of Transportation under Joe Biden. The possible nomination would vault the 2020 Democratic presidential candidate into the federal government, getting the former South Bend, Indiana mayor what many Democrats see as needed experience should he want to run for president again. Of course, to be fair, they also said that about the China thing, that he would need that foreign policy experience, as if having been the ambassador to China is a thing that's gonna sway literally anyone in the next primary. But now, having been the head of the Department of Transportation is exactly the experience he needs, Francesca, to be president material in 4 years.
First of all, it is in dispute whether his experience in South Bend was actually a positive one. I think the residents of South Bend would say otherwise, especially when it comes to things like housing and infrastructure. So transportation, I'm a pass on that. I'm gonna say yeah on like China, sure, why not? It feels much more in his like Harvard-esque lane. You know, he probably speaks Mandarin already. Like,
nope, he doesn't, I checked. He speaks many languages, but not the one that they were going to
send
to the country.
Whatever, like Arabic is Mandarin in a way, and he went to an Ivy League school. The point is, he's entitled and he deserves it. Give it to me. But it is just painful though, because you know, I think I heard Cenk say the other day, you know, that like Bernie lost, and it's true, Bernie lost. And at once, when I truly thought there would be more of an overture to progressives, instead I feel like there's been an overture to people like Buttigieg, who's like, well, Buttigieg has gotta be on the cabinet. Like, I mean, I don't know if he's the future of the Democratic Party, because I don't know what his politics are. Like, he writes a whole essay about how he loves Bernie Sanders in college, and now he just started punching left the entire time during the primary about how like we want Medicare for those who want it. God. So yeah. I don't know who he is actually, but I definitely know he's not qualified to be president. So this is better than that,
I guess, although I would say like in that graphic, they say many see as needed experience should he want to run for president. Okay, that's true. I think the idea that people are gonna be in 3 years gonna be like, oh, did he run the Department of Transportation? Well, then let me take a look at it. No, that's not how it works any more than the China thing. That's just not how primaries work, but whatever. They wanna be able to say he's experienced, so that's fine. But what about the experience you need to run the Department of Transportation? I don't know exactly what day to day that requires, but I'm assuming it requires something other than just having been the mayor of South Bend for a couple of years. What about that experience? Why don't we treat these departments as something serious that matters? Why don't we do that? Remember how frustrated again we were with like Ivanka always being around and why is Jared Kushner in charge of everything? It's an unserious way of governing. This is an unserious way of governing, and it's not just about him. For this post, multiple Democrats have been considered, including Rahm Emanuel, Eric Garcetti, and also the governor of Rhode Island. I don't know about the governor of Rhode Island. Maybe Gina Raimondo has a lot of like experience with transportation. But just because they were mayors doesn't mean they're the right person to manage the infrastructure of our entire country. It is not a consolation prize. It's an important job of its own. Yeah. And it isn't just supposed to be handed out to theoretically Pete Buttigieg will look a little bit better in a couple of years. And by the way, let me cut to the core of their assertion here, which is he's a rising star.
Right.
But they need to give this to him because they say, well, he's in Indiana and it's moving right. So can he really rise? No, but then he's not a rising star. He's a being lifted star. If he could rise, he wouldn't need you to hand him a position he's not qualified for. That's what you give to a person who ain't gonna rise unless you help them out.
Absolutely.
And so you're fundamentally cutting against your own thesis here by saying, well, I don't know, I guess we'll give him labor or maybe he can be like a general or something.
But and what's interesting about this, you know, I think that the Kamala Harris pick for Veep was definitely to me, not surprising politically, because I think politically they're more in line, but surprising because Kamala very much, you know, called Biden on some of his BS, especially around busing. Buttigieg went to bat for Biden like multiple times during the primaries, right, was always more politically on his side. Someone that was in the Obama administration, who I actually really like, who also ran for president, is Julian Castro. He was the secretary of HUD under Obama, and he was great, but he also kind of criticized Biden from both a progressive perspective, was much more on the Bernie end. And I think at one point, like called Biden on the fact that he literally just repeated what he had said like a couple times. He was like, you just said that. I know, we heard you. What are you talking about? And it's like, ooh, can't name that. But yeah, Buttigieg. Buttigieg. The entitlement. He's like, the entitlement of, yes, being lifted from a small town mayor. And I will say, I don't like Garcetti and I do not like Rahm Emanuel, but at least their cities are bigger. LA doesn't count in terms of having public transportation because we don't have
it. I mean, we've expanded the metro a little bit or whatever.
Not really under Garcetti. But yeah, so I don't know about that. But you know what I mean? You can make the case because they have like, these are actual metropolises.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate the whole thing. I hate this approach to governing. You find the most qualified person, that's what you should do. If he wants to run for president, he can figure out a way to do that. Like maybe appealing to one person who isn't ghostly white, that would be a good first step. And I don't think the Department of Transportation is gonna clinch that significant flaw of his. Anyway, thank you, Francesca, for joining us. I feel a little bit better. I was launching into this week just hating politics and political commentary and all of it, but I feel a little bit better. Thank you for that.
Yeah, that's because I'm amazing.
That's probably what it is. You're a rising star, you know what? You don't need to be lifted. But anyway, let's lift talk about me. Your rising star.
Lift me, please. Pick me up.
By the way, like Bernie Reyes, if you want to lift me, you can lift me. I'll do whatever. I'm not qualified for it, but this is politics. Apparently, you don't have to be.
Oh anyway, my God. Press secretary, John Iadarola. Ugh. Any day.
Disaster.
Any day. Disaster. Yes. Yes. No. You could do it.
I'd like to see you do it, actually. That'd be pretty good.
Oh, bad idea. I would put my foot in my mouth like, oh God. I can't even get the sentence out.
You're gonna be quoted by Maggie Haberman as talking about cuddle puddles in regards to infrastructure reform. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. She said, quote, show me the undies. You can listen to my podcast, The Bituation Room, which is equal parts comedy and politics and analysis, and follow me on Instagram or Twitter at FrannyFio.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you as always.
Take care.
Joining us once again on the program, the senior Washington correspondent for Business Insider, Dave Leventhal. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Hey, thanks for having me, John.
Always glad to have you on. So Dave, you've been on multiple times over the years to talk about the epic struggle to get Donald Trump to pay the bills that he has accrued in cities across America. And it looks like we have an update. Big movement in this area, huh?
We do have an update. So the thing that is totally not news is that Donald Trump does not like to pay his bills. If we were having this conversation in the 80s or we were having this conversation yesterday, the story would be the same. But over the course of his campaign, and this dates back to 2015, when he first started running for president, he would go and have his Make America Great Again rallies at cities all across the country. And some of the cities who in many cases would have, you know, dozens and dozens of different police officers and emergency personnel go to those events to staff them, to provide public safety resources that the Secret Service requested. They would try to recoup some of those costs and they wouldn't get their bills paid. However, the little city of La Crosse, Wisconsin, we got a check from that city here at Business Insider that had Donald Trump's campaign treasurer's signature on it. And in fact, they had paid a bill just last month to the city of La Crosse, Wisconsin, stemming from a Mike Pence rally, Vice President Mike Pence, back in September. So they were as surprised as anyone that this bill got paid. And it's the only bill that we know of to this date that the Trump campaign has paid in a political campaign context for public safety costs that they hadn't prearranged or whatnot with the city.
Yeah, that is amazing. And I have multiple faults, but just in case people are joining us at this late date in this campaign, in comparison to other presidential candidates, how this sort of behavior, is this something that we see? Like, is Joe Biden leaving a string of unpaid tabs in cities across America?
Well, the most apples comparison, of course, would be Joe Biden. Joe Biden, he had not had any of these major massive rallies that Donald Trump had during the course of his campaign. So as a result, there really isn't any comparison there. Joe Biden's campaign did pay some small bills. There was one bill in Philadelphia that we actually wrote about back in November that was overdue. We asked the Biden campaign about it in the city of Philadelphia. As soon as we did, they said that they were gonna pay that bill and make sure that it wasn't overdue. But there's really no comparison to be drawn with Joe Biden. Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, they paid some bills, they didn't pay others. So it's kind of a mixed bag as to what these presidential campaigns will do. And that really kind of goes back to the fact that there's no rules for the road. If a presidential candidate, Democrat or Republican, comes to town, has a big rally, the Secret Service will ask ostensibly for a lot of local resources. The localities will provide them almost 100% of the time because, you know, what are they gonna do? Not provide those rallies and have something bad happen in their town? They don't want that to happen. And then meanwhile, the Congress is not providing money to the Secret Service to pay these municipalities back. So it's a big catch 22. And ultimately, local taxpayers are the ones who oftentimes get screwed as a result of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's really weird because I understand why it's unlikely that Congress is gonna pass legislation specifically to force presidential candidates to pay back local police departments. That's below the level of things that they normally spend a great deal of time on. You know, they have to do important things like name post offices and stuff like that. But I mean, this is a year where lots of people have been getting out in front of saying that they're opposed to defunding the police, but they're okay with a practice that effectively stiffs police departments in major cities to the tune of potentially hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. So I don't know if there's any movement to correct this practice. I'm assuming at this point that there is not.
So, you know, in a very real way, Donald Trump is defunding the police by not paying these bills. And that's a criticism that I've heard and that some of these cities are making that, hey, look, Donald Trump, if you love law enforcement, if you back the blue, if you support police, if you want to put your money where your mouth is when it comes to supporting law enforcement, here's a real easy way for you to do that. And these are cities all across the country that have sent bills and not had those bills paid. We're talking about El Paso and Tucson and Mesa, Arizona, Spokane, Washington, Erie, Pennsylvania, Burlington, Vermont, and about 10 others. Okay, so it's not like this is just one segment of the country. We're not even talking necessarily about blue cities and red cities here. It's a mixed bag, but Donald Trump simply has said, and his campaign earlier in this year told me, look, we don't feel like this is our responsibility as a campaign to pay these bills. We feel like it's a Secret Services Department. And that goes back to that notion of Congress not giving the Secret Service money. So directly to your question, could Congress pass legislation to fund the Secret Service for this purpose? Yes. Could they stick in some rider in some omnibus bill to go ahead and do that too? Absolutely. Have they done that at this point? No. And are there members of Congress who would like to? Yes, but they just haven't had unanimity on it, or at least enough votes to go and pass it. And we'll see what happens in 2021, particularly now that we've had so many cities hurting so badly, budgets cratering all across the country. And even though this is not a huge amount of money, it's about $1.82 million that we've tallied up all across the country of unpaid Trump bills. That's still real money for some of these communities, especially some small cities that might only have 10, 20, 50,000 people. That pays for a couple of salaries or whatnot, those unpaid police bills.
And finally, based on what you said they said about their obligation, they don't seem to philosophically change in this. So do we have any idea of why this one particular bill got paid?
We don't. So I reached out to the Trump campaign on several occasions over the span of a few days. They refused to answer my questions on this. I put it to them. I said, did you intentionally pay this bill? And if you didn't, was it a mistake? So we don't know at this point. And there is a possibility that this could just simply be a mistaken paid bill as opposed to something that was intentional on the part of the Trump campaign.
We had talked not long ago about inauguration funds, corporate donors to those, and trying to get an idea of, with Joe Biden, how might it compare to the sorts of massive amounts of money that was raised for the Trump inauguration fund. And you've got some recent reporting on at least one major contributor that's been identified.
We did. So we confirmed with Boeing, the aerospace giant and defense contractor, that they are going to give $1 million to Joe Biden's inauguration. So it's important to note here that Joe Biden made a big decision. Joe Biden decided to take contributions for his 2021 inauguration, which was something that Donald Trump did in 2017, take corporate money, and that Barack Obama did in 2013 for his second inauguration. However, Barack Obama and Joe Biden, of course, as vice president back in 2009, didn't take corporate contribution, and in fact had some pretty strict and severe limits on the money coming in for their inauguration fund back in 2009 for their first inauguration. And that was really because they felt at that time that they didn't want special interest money. They didn't want corporate cash. They wanted this to truly be an inauguration that was devoid and free from that kind of financing. But over the past three inaugurations, we've seen presidents get away from that. And Joe Biden said, hey, any corporation who wants to give me up to $1 million for my inauguration, I will take that money. That's where he stands right now.
And just to be clear for people who don't necessarily know, so in terms of direct contributions to politicians, there are limits that are far lower than $1 million. But this is apparently an area where if he wanted to, he could have accepted far more than that.
So all the rules that you know that apply to campaign contributions to a presidential campaign, those don't apply for inaugurations. Inaugurations are very much a free for all. Corporate money, union money, special interest money, trade groups, individuals. If a presidential candidate who is now being inaugurated president wants to take any or all of the above of that kind of money, they have the ability to do so. And when it comes to disclosing the money after the fact too, the rules are very different as well. So for example, they're gonna have to, Joe Biden that is, disclose about 90 days after the inauguration who gave them money, but they're not gonna have to disclose how they even spent that money. And that, of course, is a huge question here in 2021, John, given the fact that COVID-19 is going to loom over all the proceedings. We don't exactly know. And I don't think really the Biden inauguration, based on what they've told us and what they've said publicly so far, knows all the details as to whether they're going to have the breakfasts and lunches and dinners and brunches and balls and all of the trappings of a standard inauguration that's likely going to be crunched down to a major degree. But at the same time too, all that money that's flowing in the door, They're still taking it anyways. There's going to be something that happens on inauguration. There's going to be a lot of corporate money funding it ostensibly. And that's something that remains to be seen exactly how it's going to shake out in full.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you're doing this reporting and getting people to focus on this, because it seems very odd that our country, to an increasing degree, seems to understand that political money could hypothetically sway a politician. And we've apparently decided that, not for this one. That won't have any effect on them. Oh no, you can also hide how much, and that's not gonna have any sort of effect. It's bizarre. And so glad that you're doing this. With Boeing in particular, like that's the one we have. So if one was worried that Boeing might be doing this to gain some sort of political influence, and I'm assuming that Boeing has probably contributed to every single inauguration going back literally decades that they were capable of. Do they have any sort of pending business before the government? Anything that when Biden comes in is going to be a concern?
So Boeing, first of all, to just get it on the record, has in fact given to the Trump 2017 inaugural and the Obama 2013 inaugural. So this is not new for them, absolutely. We've also reached out to about 60 different companies and counting at this point to put the question to them as to whether they are gonna give. And we can tell you that Ford, for example, Bank of America, and Aflac are among the companies that told us that they intend to give, even if they haven't 100% confirmed it. There are many others who are likely going to give and just haven't said so at this point. Yeah, Aflac, yeah. So maybe the duck will show up to the inauguration, who knows? But regardless, I mean, we've got, we definitely have a situation every inauguration where there are corporate contributions like that, where hey, Boeing, I mean, the Max or the 737 Max aircraft that had the two fatal crashes that had been sidelined for almost 2 years. I mean, this is a huge, massive issue for Boeing. Boeing has defense contracts up the wazoo. You add that all together, we are talking about hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars, probably even into the billions of dollars that are tied up with decisions that the government will make that will either affect positively or negatively a company like Boeing. We're picking on Boeing because Boeing has confirmed that they are going to give a donation, but the same thing holds true for corporations all across the board. They're not participating because just strictly out of altruism, although many will say, hey, we find this to be a civic duty. This is a huge every 4 years event. We want to participate, but it's not going to hurt them any to sure have $1 million in front of the next president of, or the incoming president of the United States. And also to have the access that comes with making a donation like that, tickets to all the events, an opportunity to speak potentially with the president of the United States or the vice president or the families or the incoming cabinet. I mean, this is as swampy as it gets every inauguration, even though this is a huge, big American event that everyone is gonna watch and whatnot. I mean, the influence peddling here is alive and well every 4 years when we have an inauguration.
Yes. And I assume for most viewers, pretty obvious the civic duty you gave to Trump, okay? Let's stop talking about the civic duty, Boeing. Anyway, great reporting here, Dave, on both of these topics. And by the way, anybody watching this, you can go to Business Insider, you can read these write-ups, which have a lot more information. By the way, go for this one about the inauguration, because you'll wanna see some of the statements that were made by the Obama team before the first inauguration. It makes the donations that were accepted the second one just an amazing sort of crystallization of the arc of the two terms of Obama. I just love that little bit. But anyway, as always, Dave, excellent work, and thank you for joining us.
Hey, I appreciate it, John, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.